welcome to another episode of Quantum of Solace with David Robertson, and I'm Al Smith of the Solace Centre for Public Christianity. Topics this week, we're going to be looking at named person, we're going to be looking at the PrEP drug and various other things.
I'm just an average man with an average life. I work from 9 to 5, hey hell, I pay the price. All I want is to be left alone in my average home. But why do I always feel like I'm in the twilight zone? And I always feel like somebody's watching me. And I have no props. Oh, I always feel like somebody's watching me. Tell me, is it just a dream?
Name person was, in fact, will you tell us what name person is?
Name person is part of the Scottish Government's GIRFEC scheme, Getting It Right for Every Child. The aim is to reduce child abuse, improve reporting across lots of different agencies to ensure good outcomes for every child in Scotland, no child left behind. The named person scheme would involve as a named person being appointed on behalf of every single child to access services, to step in as an early warning system if they see things going wrong in a child's well-being.
Now, it's a great idea. I have people in my own church, and I know quite a few Christians who are involved in social services and general welfare who think this is a brilliant idea and think it's been working in the Highlands. So why do two Christian organisations, amongst others, the Christian Institute and CARE, why have they taken the government to court over this?
Well, I mean, there's a number of things that have been proven to be wrong with the way that the Act is implementing the named person scheme. But for me, I think one of the biggest issues is the way that the whole system is conflating two completely different issues. I mean, it's confusing welfare and well-being. You know, why is that a problem? You know, if you're a Christian, a Jew, a Muslim, a Hindu, a Sikh, an atheist, no matter who you are in Scotland, we could probably all broadly agree on what child welfare would mean. But based on our different worldviews, we wouldn't necessarily agree about what would be in the best interests of a child's well-being. And what the Scottish Government are trying to do through the named person system is actually to introduce their own definition of what well-being actually means. And in reality, it's quite a broad, a secular humanist view.
Let's stop with the child well-being, because I think this is actually the key issue. I have to say, I mean, there are Christians who have different perspectives on this and agree. You know, it's not like a matter of doctrine, but I think the Christian Institute and CARE, from their perspective, what they were doing, in principle, I don't think they were against the name person. It was this aspect of well-being and the sharing of information. And in particular, the concern is that the responsibility for the upbringing of the child moves from the parent to a state guardian.
Well, it changes the emphasis and it adds in an extra layer over and above the parent. So in essence, the state is taking to itself powers that it hasn't really had before. It's creating a new layer of involvement with families, isn't it?
Yeah. Now, another problem there is that there are thousands of children who are being abused. Actually, this week it was headline news, strange enough, only for one day, about 550 children who have been involved in very serious abuse in at least 80 cases across Scotland, which the police had just come. So there's no question that there is a real difficulty and a real problem. That's a huge issue.
That's child welfare.
What they're trying to do is say this, that they're saying, we want to be able to identify abuse before it happens. The problem is, what do you mean by child welfare? So, if our aim is to prevent abuse, what do you mean by abuse? What do you mean by welfare? So, let's just take one example. Ayr Council have produced a leaflet in which it suggested that questions should be asked the child about behaviour of parents at home, about sexual views. Are they homophobic? And so, you end up in a situation where I don't think we're there, but I think the potential is there. I think the intent is good, but the potential is that the state could actually have more information and pass on information than parents. And I think that's what they went to court for.
The Supreme Court judgment said that the named person scheme as it stands, that its aims were legitimate and benign. That may be true. The way that the scheme is drafted, it is putting in a system that is open to abuse should circumstances change going forward. If society changes, then a system is in place that would allow incredible state interference within families.
Yeah, I actually think not even if society changes, I think it's open to abuse now. It was incredibly badly drafted legislation.
The SNP government were warned throughout the process, yeah, though, about the problems.
They were warned
by the
Faculty of Advocates. Yeah. They were warned about the impracticality of it. And the judgment is that they have been found to be in breach of European human rights law, which is so ironic because the SNP government has pledged to protect European human rights law. And here's another fascinating thing. And this is one of the things that interests me. I mean, they've been given 42 days. I think it will be tightened up. But did you notice the spin they put on it?
Yeah, I mean, they've basically said that the...
It was a victory.
It was a victory.
It was a victory because, in principle, the court supported it. No, it wasn't a victory. The law was found to be illegal.
The way it was drafted.
Yes. It's not just a wee tinkering. We need this sorted out. One of the key provisions of the law is information sharing, and they were found to be in breach of human rights law on that.
Yeah, which actually raises a whole bunch of different questions. I mean, it, you know, it raises the issue of governance within Scotland as a whole. If you've got a single-tier government without any kind of revising house, it also raises questions about the level of opposition within Scottish politics to it.
Yes, because initially it was passed unanimously.
Yeah.
I mean, now the Tories are against it, but there's a little bit opportunism, I think, coming in there as well.
Yeah.
I tell you what else was interesting was the Sunday Herald, and we'll link to a blog I wrote about this. We won't go into too much detail, but ran an article which suggested that the Christian Institute were being investigated for pursuing this campaign.
When I read that on Sunday, the first thought went through my head, and it's maybe it's not a fair thought, but is that someone in the Scottish government in a fit of pique, you know,
no, they don't need to do
the Christian
that.
Institute?
No, they don't.
What happened there?
No, they don't need to do that. I'm pretty sure that this is what happened. Some disgruntled SNP supporter in Edinburgh or whatever, and this has been threatened before, decided to report the Christian Institute to the Charities Commission. The Charities Commission have to investigate.
Yeah, any report.
And that person then goes to the newspaper and says they are being investigated, which as a statement is true, but why they're being investigated is a different matter.
Yeah.
That gets reported in a headline. It gives the Sunday Herald the opportunity to talk about creationists, basically redneck evangelicals, religious nutters, all the rest of it, bring out all the prejudices, hype up the pressure. Of course, automatically, it was dismissed. Within a week, it was dismissed.
It was dismissed the next day. It's disappointing that the Sunday Herald would actually go to print on a story like that. Then for the Herald, its sister newspaper, to come out and totally reverse the story.
Yeah, there we go. Go and have a look at that judgment. Go and have a look at what we've written about it. And ponder this, all you people who are opposed to the European Convention on Human Rights. It's because of that the named person scheme has in effect been stopped and will have to be redone.
What's going to happen now? The SNP government are going to come back with a revised scheme.
Oh, totally. Well, they have to.
Is the nature of the data sharing is central really to the whole scheme?
It is.
What we're going to see is a scheme that's actually probably very different now, isn't it? Or
yeah, it's the point of the whole scheme. Now, of course, they'll spin it as exactly the same. They'll spin it as this is tweaked and tidied up and so on. No, it won't be. But I have to say, overall, it's a good result. Some good news.
There's a part of this feeling that I just cannot kill. That the name of this thing's not love. And I can't take a potion and I won't take a pill. To a torture's misfill. That the name of this thing's not love.
Prep.
PrEP, what is PrEP? PrEP is a pre-exposure prophylaxis. It's an expensive course of anti-HIV drugs that costs about £5,000 a year. It was something that the NHS in England, they rejected it earlier in the year. There's been a case in which the NHS has been forced to think again.
Okay, now let me tell you a wee story. I was phoned by the Daily Mail asking, would I want to make a comment on it? To which the answer was, no.
And
the reason why no is because you're on a hiding to nothing, because it's presented as, here are you, a religious person, because you're homophobic, you don't want people to have these drugs, how cruel, nasty, and so on. And to get round that one is so difficult. And so I just thought, I can't be bothered with this. So I said no. And also, I said I didn't know enough about it, which was true. However, I then went away and read about it. I did not realize that the purpose of PrEP is to allow gay men to have unprotected sex. Now, let me say something here that's incredibly controversial, but true. there are more risks involved in homosexual sex than in heterosexual sex.
Of course there are. Particularly men who want to have unprotected sex with multiple partners.
Yeah, now that's a fact. Now here, without talking about the rights and wrongs of homosexual sex, here we have an issue where gay men in particular are in danger of passing on and receiving HIV because of unprotected sex.
Mm-hmm.
What's the way to deal with that? We have been told by educationalists, we've been told our children should be taught this, that education and condoms are the answer.
That's the basis of the whole government harm reduction strategy and sexual education for everybody.
I heard a gay rights activist on the radio saying that education and condoms don't work. I mean, like, if we said that, we'd be shot. So here's the thing. This drug has anything from a 96 to a 99% effectiveness rate if it's regularly taken and so on. Condoms have the same effectiveness rate. In fact, possibly even higher.
Slightly cheaper as well.
This drug costs £400 per month, about £5,000 a year. If you want to, you can get it from India for £600 in the year. Now, the objection that I have to this is this. The NHS has limited funding for medicine. Why should we fund lifestyle medicines? In other words, because someone chooses to have sex without a condom with another man, why should we fund that? At the expense of, let's say, drugs for spina bifida or something else.
No, I mean, can you imagine the fuss that the media is going to make about that when you hear the stories of how these people are suffering because you've chosen to subsidise a gay man's preferred choice in their sex life?
Yeah, it's not that we suddenly create new money. And I think that is the issue. So the issue is not about being pro or anti-homosexuality. The issue is, why would any government fund this? And the only answer is because they don't want to be accused of being homophobic, and because the gay rights lobby are so powerful, and because the media are often not prepared to take it on. No. But I want to offer one word of caution in this. I think that a lot of the media and most people in the United Kingdom are going, what are you on about?
Two men walking up a hill, one disappears and one's left standing still. I wish we'd all been ready. There's no time to change your mind. The sun has come and you've been left behind.
Couple of wee ones to finish with.
Tim LaHaye. You're a big fan of Tim LaHaye and his Rapture series, Left Behind books. He's passed on. He has been raptured. He has gone to be with the Lord.
When I was a child. I thought as a child, I reasoned like a child. But now I'm a man, I put childish ways behind me. So Tim LaHaye was a very influential person because of the Left Behind books and the Left Behind film. He's died, he's gone to be with the Lord. Christians have different view of the end times. Again, we wrote an article on that. But it is a little bit worrying when people think that the Book of Revelation provides a blueprint for governments today. It doesn't.
No.
In fact, I'm about to begin a new series on Christian Today, looking at the Book of Revelation and how it applies today. So if folks are interested in that.
Yeah, we'll put a link on the show notes for this program to your Christian Today article that you wrote about Tim LaHaye.
He did the match.
He did the monster match.
The monster match.
It was a graveyard smash.
He did the match.
It caught on in a flash.
He did the match.
He did the monster match.
The Monster Mash.
You do the Monster Mash.
Yeah, it's a graveyard smash. Do people actually know that? I mean, I think.
Well, they will do because I've just played it. So
yeah. Okay. Well, I love it. But what I loved was I didn't know the story of the songwriter, which was fantastic because.
Well, I mean, I'd never really heard of this at all before. But so, what? I mean, very quickly, what's the deal?
Well, the guy was a guy called Gary Paxton who wrote this song and was typical rock and roller, drugs, you know, adultery, everything else.
Mm-hmm.
And then he was converted and became a gospel songwriter.
And
the latter half of his life was spent doing that. Look him up. That's all I'm saying. Looking him up. I just think it's absolutely fascinating. We keep coming across all these creative people who either are converted or they were converted before they become creative. I just thought that was a wonderful story.
No, there's something that's not really making the mainstream media news, but there's been a number of attacks by Muslims on Christians within Egypt. The Copts are copping it again.
Yeah, it's really, really serious. And also what's still going on in Iraq and what's going on in Syria. I think we'll come back to that one, as we'll come back to the American presidency. As can I give one note of pride for Scotland?
What's that?
38% of Syrian refugees coming to Britain come to Scotland. All Scottish councils except two have accepted. I'm proud of my nation.
And another thing about your nation is that they're sort of deporting Australian immigrants. There's the story of the Brain family. You know,
yeah, that's not my nation, I'm afraid. This is where I turn Scottish nationalist. That is British immigration policy, which you put immigration as about bits of paper, not people. And it was designed to appease all those who moaned about too many immigrants coming to Britain from Europe. The people want them. They are needed. It is absolute brain dead moronic of the government to throw them out. I know that the Scottish government has been arguing for them to stay. Well, good for the Scottish government. And then we do pray for that family and actually for their church up in Dingwall. Do we have anything else? Yes, let's just to finish with, again, mention the Solas magazine, the Solas Connect training courses, and also the Solas conferences on sexuality, society and the church, and on reaching the Highlands. All the details are on our website. Next week, I hope that we're going to come to you with some big news about Solas. But meanwhile, we shall leave you hanging on tender hooks.
Yo. We're part of a culture that really loves to hate us. Every chance they get attempt to isolate and debate us. It's not that they don't like us, it's just they don't like God in us. It's common knowledge and oddly enough, it makes a lot of sense to a lot of us. We completely understand because we used to occupy the same space and lived in a similar type state until we tasted of God's grace. So we continue loving this world that so easily rejects us and passionately press past the lack of their cultural acceptance. And as if there weren't enough problems for us gaining influence, we keep fighting over the issue of what's too worldly of a Christian to make a difference. So no matter how you paint it, or politically campaign it, whether you water it down and drain it, it's really all the same, ain't it? It's the same frustration, same constant segregation. Christians living like aliens, trying to relate with citizens of a different nation. What always makes for a better presentation than bark and bite is a proper understanding of living life filled with salt and light. So we walk this fine line of walking in light of God's kindness and live with a sense of worldliness without the fear of compromising. Loving God and neighbor until Christ comes to split the sky or die in a society hailing Jesus as Messiah. Yep.